B-Pod Studios.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kelker and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Agenda-free Friday here on Felger and Maz. Again, Mike's out today. Jim Murray alongside Marshall Hookin to give us headlines. Hour number three, Chris Gasper alongside, as he is every Friday at 4 o'clock. Agenda-free Friday, driven by our friends at the Bernardi Auto Group. So thanks to them on Agenda-free Friday. What's up, Gasper? GQ, what's up?
What's going on? How you guys doing?
Good, you?
Good.
It's more peaceful in here. I can feel it.
Really? Why's that?
Yeah, I don't know. What could it possibly be?
He's like one of the best-dressed guys in the business, Murray, isn't he?
Oh, every single day.
His trendy sneakers.
There ain't a pair of sweatpants in that guy's drawers.
No, there are. I wore them most of the day yesterday.
And they cost $500.
That's not true.
You get those trendy new sneakers going the whole nine yards. Looking sharp, Casper.
He is not dressed for radio.
I just bought a pair of those shoes, by the way.
Well, the show's on TV, and I know. Yeah.
So let me read something here from Chris Gasper's column today in the Boston Globe.
Someone's very nervous about Kyrie.
And we haven't really gotten to this particular part of the Kyrie discussion today. I mean, it was certainly a topic here in the last couple of days. Today, we haven't gotten to it yet, and then we'll get back to your calls as well. But Gasper writes today, the Celtics are in a precarious position with Irving and his wishes. They don't want to do anything to upset him and diminish the chances of him following through on his preseason proclamation to re-sign, a pledge that has gotten more flexible than a pipe cleaner by the month. What's that called, a simile or a metaphor? What's that? That's a metaphor?
I think it's a metaphor.
That's a metaphor. So even if the Celtics didn't think Irving playing in the All-Star game was a good idea,
doesn't use like or as, which would be a simile,
they wouldn't tell him or us. Okay, and that last sentence really is the one that's important. Even if the Celtics did not think that Irving playing in the All-Star game was a good idea, they wouldn't tell him or us. Really, writes Gasper, the responsibility here is Irving's. The Celtics are in kowtow to Kyrie mode. The discretion exercised should be his own. You don't think he should play this
game? I don't think he should play. I do not think he should play in this game. I think the other thing that's in that column that I referenced was when he was sort of interrogated on February 1st in New York about what he was going to do and what his future plans would be. One of the things he said that sort of flew under the radar and all the, you know, talk to me July 1st thing was, we have goals. And one of the goals is to win a championship. My focus right now, he said, is winning a championship with the Boston Celtics. Well, if that's true, then don't play in this game because it's not worth it. You would be a little over off a strained right knee. The game doesn't mean anything. It's an exhibition game. You know, I've heard Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens contort themselves into this pretzel logic of, well, you know, he has to get up and down the court and that's going to be good for him. And forget it. Like, Kyrie Irving could wake up tomorrow and if that knee feels good, drop 30 points. He does not need to get up and down the court at the All-Star game to be able to help them in the second half. And so given his history of injury, given his importance to the team, and I still think he's important to the team, you know, beating the Sixers and the Pistons hasn't changed that for me. I don't want to see him out there in a meaningless game. And the other thing is, like, we've all seen the way this guy plays. Like, how did he play on Christmas? He was phenomenal. He loves a grand stage. That's a grand stage. So even if he doesn't feel 100%, or even if they say, hey, you know, don't go all out, you think when he gets in this thing and he's on pretty much the grandest stage the NBA has, you think he's not going to try and go out there and be Kyrie and prove a point and show that he's the best of the best? I don't think he's wired any other way. I don't want him anywhere near this game. Like, you know, sit in the stands with the spectators. There's no way he should play in this game.
Well, never even mind from a physical standpoint, which I understand where you're coming from. If that's the goal, obviously, to try to win a championship or go as deep as you can with this team, just from an optics standpoint, I just think it looks bad considering he's missed these last couple of games. So with the way that they've talked about him and saying, like, oh, well, no, he can run up and down the court, it seems like they have no problem with it. You say it's a kowtow to Kyrie.
Totally. I mean, I listen to
it. Do you find
it
unbecoming the way that they've acted this week?
I mean, I think they've bent their will and their principles to Kyrie. And that's the way it is in the NBA. I think they're
invested. I was just going to say, so what's wrong with that?
I mean, well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but you have to draw the line somewhere. And that's another thing I said in the beginning of the column. Like, everybody needs boundaries, right? And it seems like, to me, this would be a pretty clear boundary. Like, hey, All-Star game, not a good idea. But I think at this point, they're so afraid and so frozen with the idea that the remember we talked before, and it was like he really liked the new practice facility? That could be one of the reasons he stays. He thought it was really cool. I mean, it doesn't take much to push him either way. So if they're sort of saying, hey, you know, we don't think you should play in this All-Star game. And also, does Kyrie strike you as somebody that responds well to somebody telling him what he should do?
No.
Who does? For crying out, I hate it. Who doesn't hate it? And the comments you're talking about, both Stevens and Ainge made similar comments this week. I don't know which one Jimmy pulled, but they effectively said the same thing. Jimmy, play it.
And I actually look at it as, to be honest with you, if he can, it's a good thing to be able to run up and down the court a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't played in a while. And so even though those All-Star games are just glorified pickup games in a lot of ways, I think just being able to run up and down, move a little bit, get ready. We play next Thursday in Milwaukee. You know, if you're not able to do that for now going on 2 weeks or 12 days, it's not as advantageous. So if he can, even if he can move a little bit, if he is cleared to play, especially if he was fully 110% healthy, then I would encourage him to run.
So Chris, you think they're kissing his ass?
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't think that's really what they believe. I think they're just trying to put lipstick on a pig and present it in the best possible way from a team standpoint. I mean, I think, again, you know, the best thing to do here would be proceed with caution, right? Again, you're talking about a guy with a history of injury, not to this knee, but just in general. And it's a long season. And what have they been doing throughout this year? They've been giving him these rest games against teams that aren't that good or teams they feel like they can beat without him, even though they've lost some of those games, like to Brooklyn, at Brooklyn. So if you're so concerned with getting him all the way through the season to the end that you're resting him essentially for regular season games that count when you need seeding, but then you're okay with him basically like 7 days, 8 days after suffering a knee injury playing the All-Star game? How does that make sense?
No, it's a good point, Chris. They did it with Cleveland twice.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
So they're telling you
he wants to play in it.
Right, so they're telling you on some level that the All-Star game is more important than two games against Cleveland.
Which I know they don't believe.
No,
and that's why
I know.
That's why I'm saying they're bending their will and bending, you know, their principles to him, to so that they can say the organization's behind you on this, even though I really think they don't think it's a good idea and it's not their preference.
So this line that you wrote, and again, I sort of joined things together that were separated by multiple paragraphs, but this is really the crux of it. Really, the responsibility here is Irving's. The Celtics are in kowtow to Kyrie mode, the line that just Murray just recited. The discretion exercise should be his own. The point being that Kyrie could step up here and just say, no, guys, don't worry about it. I'm not going to play. It's the right thing to do. He could make the decision, make everybody look good. Do you think he will? Do you think he's going to play?
You know how fickle this guy is.
I don't know. I mean, I think he wants to play. And as we get closer to the game, I think he'll make a decision based on how he feels. I think if he feels like he's well enough to play, even if it's not 100%, I think he'll do it. If there's something he does. So one of the other things, you know, Danny Ainge said on Toucher and Rich, it was a great interview they had with him this week, was that, you know, Kyrie has to be there anyway. His family's going to be there. They set something up with his family. There's some business interest. He has to coach in this Rising Stars thing with Jason Tatum. So he's already going to be there. I don't fault him at all for that. But he said, you know, in his free time, he's going to try and do some basketball stuff. So, and they're sending him with a physical therapist and it sounds like his trainer. So let's see how he feels on Saturday, you know, tomorrow, basically, or how he wakes up on Sunday. And I think at that point, he'll make the decision. But I would hope that, you know, again, I would hope he wouldn't play. You know, I don't know what he's going to do. I do know what he should do, which is not play.
He's going to play.
Yeah, I think so, too.
He's going to play.
It's a bad look, and it's obviously a risk physically, because I should have factored this in, but I hadn't. It was just more about the optics for me than anything else. But, Chris, you're right to bring up, you know, considering the history with knee injuries and where they want to go, he shouldn't play. I just don't know if he's going to be hit over the head with a bout of self-awareness between now and Sunday and say, yeah, you know, this is probably bad if I do this. It's just a bad look at the bottom line, and I want to do what's best for the team. No, he's going to play.
Chris, let me make this part clear. I hate it, too. The idea of him playing this game, I hate. How could you like it? The whole idea, the way they've built this thing, that from the very beginning, the whole idea was we're going to build a sustainable thing to win championships. The whole idea was a team, an operation, a collection of players and people on the same page. That was the whole idea. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to put an All-Star game before all that? It's stupid. I hate it. Yet, I do it. I would do it. Because I think you have to kiss this guy's ass. And you got to do everything in your power to make him happy to get his name on that contract July 1st. Then once his name's on it, next year, Kyrie, you're not playing. Okay? You could completely pull the flip on him because then you'll have more of a say. Then you're paying him some exorbitant amount of money, some astronomical commitment, and you'll say, no, no, now we have a say. Now we have a say, and no, you're not playing. And if he gets pissed off, so what? But now you have to kiss
his ass. And again, that speaks to sort of the position that I think that they're in. And again, I tie the two big Kyrie discussion points together this week. The idea that somehow they don't need him, which I think is ludicrous, and that he shouldn't play in the All-Star game. Like, to me, he shouldn't play in the All-Star game because they need him. They need this guy to accomplish their ultimate goals, and anything that would jeopardize his availability in the playoffs, to me, really hurts the team.
So I wanted to squeeze in a couple of calls here, and we didn't get to it. We're going to do it when we come back because I want to speak with Chris in Virginia, who wants to ask about Gordon Hayward, and Tyler in Manchester, who wants to talk about Kyrie in the All-Star game. And when we come back, Gasper has a solution for the Mookie Betts problem, the contract problem with Mookie Betts, that honestly, I think is a borderline brilliant idea that I'm kind of angry at myself that I hadn't considered. I mean, because I don't think Gasper's smarter than me, and yet he came up with this, and I didn't
go to Tufts, I'm not.
We'll do that when we come back.
Duggar and Mez, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mez.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Gasper's here. He thinks Kyrie should pull the plug on himself for the All-Star game. That would be a noble gesture. It would also require some measure of humility, which I don't think that Kyrie Irving necessarily possesses. Tyler's in Manchester. Tyler, what do you got?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up, Tyler?
I just quickly wanted to touch upon Kyrie Irving.
Okay, go ahead.
I think Gasper's right. I think they should bench Kyrie Irving for this game because he's this close.
Yeah, so Tyler, just to clarify, Chris, you're not saying that he should, quote-unquote, be benched.
No.
You're saying that Kyrie should have the self-awareness and the understanding at this stage of his career to pull himself out of the game.
Yeah, he's too important to the team. You know, like he said his focus this year is winning a championship with the Celtics. I think if that's the case, what's in the best interest of that? It's not playing in the game and making sure that you are 100% for what is going to be, you know, it's not the second half of the year because they played 58 games, but these final 24 games are really important as they jockey for seeding, and he needs to play as many of them as he can.
So one of the things that you have said here, Chris, going back a couple of weeks now, and I think you've said this consistently, is that one of the great variables in this Kyrie Irving story with the Celtics, this soap opera about is he going to stay, isn't he going to stay, et cetera, the team around him, are they good enough, has been the fact that Gordon Hayward has not been anything close to what the Celtics thought he was going to be when they signed him. Maybe until this week. Chris is in Virginia. Chris, go.
Yeah, Maz, you just said it. This week he finally looks like himself again, or at least close to it. And if that's what we're going to see from him the rest of this season, isn't he just as good as any trade acquisition we could have made at the deadline or any of the deadline moves that any of the other contenders made? Because Gordon Hayward at his best, or at least at like maybe 85-90% of his older self, is a better ad than any of the other ads that these teams made in the Eastern Conference.
Okay, so I hate the whole trade deadline thing that when an injured guy comes back, I can't stand that logic. I hate it. I hate that more than anything in the world. But the idea of Hayward having impact on Kyrie's decision, I think, is a significant thing for the Celtics.
I do.
What did you see from Hayward earlier in the week?
Oh, I mean, I just think the shooting. You know, look, when you make 8 of 11 shots and you shoot 6 of 7 from 3 against Philadelphia, that, I've said from the jump, you know, he has to adjust his game, health or not, to being on the Celtics the same way Ray Allen did when he came here. And what this team needs from him is shooting. You know, being able to space the floor, shoot from the outside. He's been able to do that. He looks more confident in that shot, both spotting up and off the dribble. I mean, you look at the last five games, he's averaging 17 points per game. He's shooting 61% from the field. He's been really good. And so he seems more confident. I know Brad likes him off that pick and roll. I like that too. He's executing that better than he did in the beginning of the year. But again, my issue with that is, okay, that's great when Kyrie's out, and it's great when Kyrie and Terry Rozier are both out. But how much of that are they really going to be able to run when they have everybody? What they need him to do is be able to shoot the basketball and space the floor. And if he can do that, I think that helps him a lot.
You've said before, even when we've done the Celtics show on Saturdays, that in many ways he should just be like Kevin Love, right? Like stand in the corner and shoot that three.
I mean, to some degree, he's a better ball handler. He's a great passer. Although I'll say Kevin Love's an excellent passer too, and he had to give some of that up. I think you just have to sort of look at, what does the team need from you? Not necessarily what's your full complement of skills. Like, he can't, even if he's 100% healthy, this team doesn't need him to be the Gordon Hayward he was in Utah. The guy who the last year he played for them carried them into the second round of the playoffs, where they ran into the buzzsaw that is the Golden State Warriors. They don't need that, and that's not going to work here. But they need him on different nights to pull different things out of his toolbox. I think what they need consistently every night out of his toolbox is shooting.
So, Chris, why can't they run an offense, though, with him and Kyrie on the floor that at times allows Hayward to handle the ball on top?
Oh, I think they can, but I just don't think they can put him in the pick and roll as much as they've been doing with Kyrie out. That's all. They can run those plays, and they did at the beginning of the year.
I mean, didn't Kyrie play off the ball basically in Cleveland?
Yeah, he can. He definitely can do that, and he did that with LeBron. Although the one thing I would say there is that that was a little bit more like, in my opinion, it wasn't so much that Kyrie was like off the ball. It was more like they sort of would take turns. Like there was like a rotation. Like,
so why can't you do that here?
Because there's more guys who can score. And now you're excluding a Tatum from the mix. You're excluding Marcus Morris from the mix. Marcus Smart is someone who's really started to take more shots than I thought he would this year.
Whether you like it or not.
Because he's made a lot of them up until this recent stretch with the 0 for 20 and all that. So there are other guys that are getting shots from the offense. It's just not the same as the scenarios those guys, I mean Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, have been in the past. There's just not as much opportunity because this team's more talented and has more guys who can score.
Okay, all I know is that if Hayward starts playing consistently, like he did this week in particular, and look, Steven said this too, and honestly, I didn't notice it, but Steven said he was good in the Clippers game, and I have a vague recollection of that. It's just hard to remember.
He was pretty good, right? Up until the point he got ripped by Montrezl Harrell for an easy dunk that basically sealed their defeat.
Okay, so I was going to say, once they blew the 28-point lead, to me, everything else got lost.
He was good in that game.
So, but the last two, I think he's been really good. And so, if this is what he is, well, then you accommodate him and Kyrie.
It's a fair point. I mean, they can certainly try it. I'd still put Tatum above him.
Okay, Tatum, for the time being, will have to get pushed to the side a little bit. And when I say that, I mean, I'm not saying he gets benched or anything stupid like that. I'm saying he's going to have to accept fewer shots. That's just the reality of it. Like, I look at that and say, if this is what Hayward's going to be, he's going to make other guys on the floor better, and it's going to keep Kyrie happy. And again, I come back to keeping Kyrie happy. Because in the next 6 months or 4 months or whatever the hell it is, I'm going out of my way to keep Kyrie happy. I am. Troy's in Dorchester. Go ahead, Troy.
How you guys doing today?
Good.
So I just want to hear you guys' thoughts on this, right? If Kyrie Irving steps on that court on Sunday and leaves the court even 1% less healthy than he walked, if I'm pulling Brad Stevens into my office and say, listen, we're not keeping this guy long term. He made his choice. Stats, notoriety, fame, that's more important to him than winning with a team, with a good quality team, with young guys, young studs. If you're a superstar in the league, you need to be ecstatic to be on the Celtics with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, these guys who are hungry and want to play. And
Troy, do you think this is the only place he can win?
No, absolutely not. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is, for him to make the choice to step on that court on Sunday, and he is even, I'm talking about, he has a broken nail. Anything happens to him on that court on Sunday, and I'm Danny Ainge, I'm considering just letting him walk. See you later, buddy. Whatever team gets him, have fun with your all-star.
Okay, Chris, do you think the Celtics would act that way?
No, they're too invested. I'm not saying Troy's points are legitimate. I mean, you want the flagship guy for your franchise to feel a certain way and put the team, you know, first, but they're too invested, and he's too talented.
Yeah,
it's just let him walk.
It's just that simple. He would prove himself to be a selfish employee, a irresponsible employee. But he's still your best employee, so whatever you want, buddy.
Yeah, welcome to the NBA.
Are we still talking about the Celtics?
Murray, don't you love guys like Troy? Tough guys like Troy who say you want to put Kyrie in your place, sorry. In that league especially, and I'm a big believer in talent anyway in most cases, but when it comes to the star player, give me the lipstick. I will kiss their ass all day long in that sport. Seriously, I'm not kidding. With Kyrie Irving, at least until I get him to the long-term contract. Then we can reassess and reevaluate. Yeah.
Until the ink is dry, you're going to have to sell your soul.
It's like the girlfriend thing, right, that you said?
Yeah. Kyrie Irving is the hot fiancé. You got to try to make that fiancé as happy as possible so that he goes to the altar on July 1st and you get that ring on that finger. Now that the ring's on the finger, all right, now I make the rules, in theory.
Then you can go back to being a carousing bum, Murray. I do want to get Chris's thoughts on this. It was a story from earlier in the week. Mike's in Peabody. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Tony, Chris, how you guys doing?
Good.
David Plasternak.
Mike, what the hell are you doing? Can you stop moving around? God, we can't hear you. What? Just stop moving around. What are you doing?
He's acting up, Plasternak.
Yeah, go.
All right, I want to talk about Plasternak.
Go!
Let him go.
Jimmy hung up on him.
I think he fell off the curb.
I thought it was ironic.
That's great.
Do people now call in and purposely mispronounce names to get in the montage?
Oh, you didn't get it? He was doing a bit there.
Plasternak.
Because, he was hammered.
I didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
Is the consensus among you guys that this is like a John Graham situation?
Hold on. I teased the crap out of this earlier.
For me.
In fact, along with the Mookie Betts thing.
Yeah.
Let's do the Pasternak part of it now, and then we'll get to Mookie Betts.
Okay.
When you heard the Pasternak story,
yes,
and the tweet that the Bruins sent out on Monday,
yeah,
Marsha, do you still have that tweet handy, or did you delete it?
I was talking to him as that was on me.
I said, Marshall, do you still have that tweet, Andy, or did you delete it?
I didn't delete it, but I'd have to go all the way back through to find it.
Okay.
Marshall, why would you have something from 2.5 hours ago?
Well, still up on still your
it basically
screen.
Said, if I may paraphrase, he was walking to a team transport, fell, and injured his thumb.
It was not a team transport. It said walking to his transportation.
His transportation.
From a team sponsorship dinner at 11:30 p.m.
Well, then what the hell do you need me for if you've got it in your head?
Well, I wanted it verbatim, Marshall. And he fell and hurt his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when you read that tweet?
My first thought was, do you guys remember John Graham, the Bruins?
Yes.
Who they said he stepped off the curb and like broke his ankle.
Yeah,
yeah, same thing. Yeah.
And what was it with Graham?
Because he was like out like drinking in like Faneuil Hall.
Okay.
I mean, he did. You know, it's like he did step off the curb, but he didn't step. He drunkenly stumbled off the curb, and so look, that was my first thought with Pasternak, that there was something there that caused him to fall, that it wasn't just a simple fall. Do I have any proof? I don't. I'm just saying.
Anything to the contrary from anybody connected with the Bruins?
Contrary to their story?
No, the story that you just suggested.
I haven't talked to anyone with the Bruins, so that's not really fair for me to say or characterize.
Okay, but anybody from the Bruins reach out to you?
No.
Murray, anybody from the Bruins reach out to you?
No, they don't know I exist.
Or me.
No, they know you exist, Jim.
No. So the point being is that Gasper, responsible Chris Gasper, who built a career on talent, big words, and integrity with the Globe, who like treats people fairly. Gasper just used the word drunkenly. Okay? Gasper of all people. So the point is,
No, Tony, you can't do that. You can't insinuate anything.
So I'm just saying.
No, don't go there. Don't go there.
I'm just saying, and again, it happens. 21-year-old guy, Sunday night.
He's young.
The only thing is, I'd be willing to bet we don't have the whole story. Of course we don't have the whole story. There had to be a woman involved in some capacity. There's always a woman involved in this sort of thing when you don't drink at 11:30 at night. There has to be a woman. And I'm not saying she did anything. I'm just telling you she was there. Like, there's always a woman involved. Nonetheless, Chris Gasper himself, who has more integrity in his pinky than those of us on this program have collectively, used the word drunkenly.
Well, I used it in reference to John Graham. That was my first thought, that it was like a John Graham type of situation.
Okay, well, I'm using the transitive property, so the point is you thought that Pasternak was drunk or drinking and compromised in some way, shape, or form from whatever he was
impaired. I'll say this. I thought that it was not just a sort of clumsy fall. I'm going to say that I thought that there was some sort of impairment involved that led to the injury.
Perfect.
That's fair.
That's all I'm looking for.
Okay.
Marshall's got your headlines, and when we come back, and again, I've said this all day long, Chris Gasper, I think, has offered up, in all honesty, what I think thus far is the best solution to the Mookie Betts contract problem. I haven't heard anyone suggest it yet. Gasper, I think, really is on to something. We'll talk about that next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Then can you talk about your contract situation and would you be willing to sign a deal before the start of the season to get it out of the way?
Good afternoon. I mean, sure, you know, I enjoy my time here. Obviously, we have something special going on right now for the last couple of years now, and I think I've been a part of it since it pretty much started. The Red Sox have treated me and my family amazingly so far. So we'll see what happens.
Xander Bogaerts today at spring training. He was the latest to speak. Positional guys report today or tomorrow? Today? They report today, Jimmy?
I believe everybody across Major League Baseball is due today.
Okay, so they made that uniform now, or you know, I didn't know that. It used to be different for teams, and again, shows you how much I follow this thing now as compared to.
I believe it to be true, so it is.
Yeah, so positional players.
That should
have
be the mantra for the show.
I have nothing to prove to you.
No, that's true. It's your mess. We believe it to be true, so it is.
Yeah, exactly.
If you say it with enough conviction and tone, you can make it believable.
Can we get that in a promo?
No, it's the next T-shirt. Misleading the public since 2009.
This year is believe it to be true.
No, I do. I like that. That's very good. So with regard to, I think they have their first full workout tomorrow, whatever. Bogaerts was the latest guy to show up talking about his contract. I don't know, listening to it there, I heard what he said. Listening to it, I sort of wonder, the way he said, and we'll see what happens, makes me wonder if maybe they're working on something. And so now that said, Bogaerts is represented by Boris. We all know how that goes. So I think I told you this, I don't know, a week ago, Murray, somebody's going to get a contract this spring with the Red Sox. I don't know who it is. Somebody's going to get a deal. Whether it's Sale, Bogaerts, Betts, someone's getting done.
Tony, don't they have to wait until opening day, after opening day, so it doesn't count against this year's luxury tax?
Well, technically, yes, I think that's right, unless the AAV, Jimmy, is less than, you know, they can actually, by announcing it now, they can actually come out ahead. But that's, you know, I don't want to get too complicated. In any case, you know, I don't know that I would extend myself for Bogaerts, but this brings me to Mookie Betts and your thought on Betts, Chris, which honestly I thought was terrific. And Mookie Betts also spoke about his potential future with the Red Sox. And for those of you who don't know, Betts is a free agent at the end of next season, at the end of 2020. And he just agreed for the first time to a contract with the Red Sox, 1 year, $20 million. Now, he could have gone to arbitration, but the mere fact that they avoided arbitration is newsworthy because Mookie Betts has never agreed to a contract with the Red Sox on anything. They've always either gone to a hearing or they have renewed his contract without, you know, the team has given him whatever they've chosen and Mookie's had no say. In this case, they actually agreed. Okay, they agreed. Betts still is going to be a free agent in 2 years, as I said, and he was asked about his future yesterday and said this.
Did you envision yourself playing the rest of your career in the Red Sox?
Well, you know, I love this place. I love Boston. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you just kind of have to see how it goes.
Okay, now, I don't believe him. I think it's lip service. I think that Mookie sounds to me sort of dispassionate about it or disconnected from it. It's sort of like, yeah, you know, we'll see what it goes. He sounds like David Price as opposed to Chris Sale, who says, oh, no, I love it here. It's a great place to play. I'd love to be here. We'll, you know, we'll see how that goes. But Sale, like, absolutely stated his love for Boston, the environment, and the city. Right? Those other guys don't really do that. You came up with a solution for Mookie Betts. Share it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Red Sox, you go out and you offer him an extension that's constructed, not from an AAV standpoint, but just the construct of the contract, like the JD Martinez deal. So there's an out after 2 years. So that would mean that you'd have him through the 2020 season and the 2021 season, and he'd have an out after that. It works
so
for him.
You mean 2 years on top of the one you already
yes,
have?
Yes, correct.
So really you're talking about this year and 2 more 3 years?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, he can't become a free agent until 2020. So after the 2020 season. So what I'm saying is, you know, you do this deal with him, which you get if you're the Red Sox, is you have him for an extra year, 2021. And the construct of the contract is it's a long-term deal. Again, sort of like the JD Martinez thing. It's a 5 or 6 year deal, and he gets some money in a very uncertain free agent environment. I mean, one that's very unkind right now to players with, you look at Bryce Harper still out there, Manny Machado is still out there. I'd say right now it's sort of a flinty free agent environment. So this would give him some security in terms of getting paid, right? But there's an out after 2 years so that if he wants to go and explore the market at that point, he can do so. But I think where this would really benefit the Red Sox is if he turns down that deal, given the current environment in Major League Baseball, then I don't think he wants to be here. And you know it. You know it at that point. What does he have to lose with that deal? You get some security on the back end if you want to stay in the deal, a la David Price. And one of the things David Price said, somebody asked him, did you think about opting out of your contract? He said, have you seen this free agent market? So it's the same thing. You know, Mookie locks in the money. It's like that Mike Trout extension that he signed, which was like $144.5 million. Let's say it's 5 years, $150 with an out after 2 years. If you're Mookie Betts, do you not sign that?
I mean,
if he does, so I just want them to do this. Just, you know, because you get to take the temperature of him. If he doesn't sign it, then you, like
you know,
said, he absolutely does not want to be here.
I'll tell you what, it's a great idea. And I had not thought about it. And the other element is, now naturally, Chris, I want to put my own fingerprints on it and tweak it a little bit.
Sure, because he has no reason to not sign it.
Okay, the collective bargaining agreement. I know fans don't get caught up in this stuff, but just bear with me. The contract between the players and the owners, the CBA is not up until end of 2021.
Correct.
The rules of the game are not going to change until 3 more seasons are up. Okay, you can talk all you want about opening the CBA and the owners aren't going to make dramatic changes to the system that right now favors them. Okay, so the rules are going to stay in place for 3 years. So why not go to Mookie? And Chris, I would even offer him, say, just give us one free agent year. Give us 2021 because the market sucks anyway, Mookie.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I thought you were saying 2020.
No, I'm saying we're on the same page. Yeah, we're on the same page. That's the advantage for the Red Sox. You get one extra year from him. You postpone his free agency by a year.
Okay, so to when the CBA expires, and then there'll be whole new free agent
rules. And that's why I think it works for him, because now there's a whole new free agent landscape. At that point, he would still be 29 years old, still in his prime. So it's a real win-win, I think, for both sides. And if he's not willing to do it, then I think you sort of, unless Mookie feels like, hey, Mike Trout is going to crush it in 2020 and I'll be out there with him and we'll crush it together after the 2020 season. But I don't know. There's no indication, given the current climate in Major League Baseball, that would be the case for either of them. As good as they are, the two best players in the game, like, I think the owners are like, you know, basically, you know, we have these guys by the undercarriage and there's nothing they can do about it.
I'll tell you, honestly, it didn't cross my mind and I don't know why. But like the whole idea of the opt-out has always struck me as something you do for a free agent, not your own guy. Like, I just didn't connect those dots. So, but the way Chris is presenting it, and if you think it's preposterous, boy, it is. It's really smart. I give you credit on this. It's smart. Because look at what's going on in baseball here the last couple of days. First of all, in the last week or so, Aaron Nola signed with the Phillies. He gave up 2 free agent years. Aaron Nola is a young right-handed pitcher who's probably as talented as anybody in the game. He pitched a great game against the Red Sox here during the year, if you remember. Excellent. Okay, Nola's good. He gave up 2 years of free agency. Luis Severino just agreed to a 4-year deal with the Yankees that eats up arbitration years. And you say, fine, no big deal, whatever. There's also an option for a 5th season, which is a free agent year. The point is you have young, talented players in the game who are taking multi-year deals and giving up just a smidge of free agency, 1 or 2 years, that are giving up just a little bit of that to gain a little bit of security because the market sucks anyway. There is no market right now for free agents. And then on top of it, in the case of Severino, his money is front-loaded in the event that there's a work stoppage so that he gets his money no matter what. Okay? And again, the problems in the on the baseball landscape right now, this should tell you plenty, are so severe that players are now asking for money up front because there might be a work stoppage. So the players are saying, this system blows.
Storms are coming.
Right. This system blows. We got to change the rules. And if you don't, we're walking. That's basically what the Severino deal tells you today. That's what you should read into that. And so, Chris, I give you all the credit in the world. It's a good idea. And I didn't even consider the part that you and Murray are talking about, which is the idea that if you go to Mookie with this kind of proposal.
It's a test.
Which really is a no-lose scenario for Mookie for all intents and purposes. Because he'll still get to go on the free agent market at what, age 29?
Age 29.
Okay, which is, by the way, the age that Nola will still get out on the free agent market. And Severino will still get out on the free agent market. So it feels to me like, okay, the agents are now saying, fine, you're going to tell us that guys in their 30s aren't worth it on the free agent market? We're going to have them go out there when they're 29 now. That's what we're going to do. And you're going to see other guys do contracts so they go out at age 28. If Mookie's not interested and dismisses it out of hand, he doesn't want to be here. And then you are faced with a very difficult decision after this season, which is, do you trade his ass? Because you might have no other choice. If you know he's not going to re-sign, you might have to trade him, especially if you want to sign Bogarts or Sale or J.D. Martinez if he opts out.
And that's how it helps you, because now you're not going to lose out both ways, right? If you know he's not interested, then you can move on to the next guy and spend that money on somebody else.
So write that. Write the write the column, Chris, and then send it to Dombrowski. Let's see if the Red Sox are as smart as you are. I didn't think of that. What a great idea. I didn't put it all together till today. Because, again, usually I'm a step behind. 617-779-0985. We will wrap it up with Chris Casper next.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What makes this year different than?
What makes this team and this year kind of the feeling without different than maybe the last couple of years?
I'm not sure. This is a, you know, unique team. You know, it's not going to be the same next year. Just going to have to make the best of it.
Tom Brady from earlier this year is during the postseason, I think, talking about the changes that are coming for the Patriots here on their roster. And it feels like there are a bunch of them, really. Just a lot of moving parts for the Patriots this offseason. Feels like more than usual. Rob Gronkowski potentially retiring. Devin McCourty potentially retiring. Trey Flowers is a free agent. Trent Brown's a free agent. The wide receiving core, really, they're all gone or going to be, with the exception of Julian Edelman for the most part. Proven receivers anyway. So we were just discussing this a little while ago, Chris. When you look at the Patriots' needs and the moving parts, okay, what would you deem to be their greatest area of need, you know, area of need positionally going into the offseason?
Probably I would say defensive line. I would say defensive
line. More so than wide receiver.
I would. Well, I mean, look, I think that their thought is that with Tom Brady, it's sort of one of those things like, hey, you know, I'll put my Bill Belichick hat on, even though I know there's been detente between Bill and Brady now. But, oh, you're so great? All right. Well, here you go. You'll make it work. Here's a Dorsett. Here's a Patterson. Figure it out, Mr. Goat. Like, you know, and I think that's sort of the way that they look at it. So even though that's a need for them, I think they sort of feel like they can get by with lesser guys because of Brady. And also now with their offensive line, and obviously Trent Brown, you know, they have to figure that out. But with their offensive line and running game, they don't have to lean on Brady as much, you know, because they run the football in their offense.
Okay, so
contrary
I saw
a popular belief on this show.
I saw a story today that had a sampling of like, you know, 8 draft experts with what the Patriots would take in the first round. They have the 32nd pick. They have the last pick because obviously they won the Super Bowl. Two of them, 3 of the people had him taking a quarterback, 2 of which had Kyler Murray. The other one was Daniel Jones of Duke. Two had defensive linemen, two had wide receiver, one had tight end.
They've never used a first round pick under Belichick to select a wide receiver. Okay, they've used it to obtain one in Brandon Cooks, but they have never done that.
Okay, what would you take? Positionally, what would you take?
Honestly, based on this draft and what I know of it at this point, and I have to dig in more, I would take a left tackle. I think there's some left tackle depth at the end of this draft. A guy like Andre Dillard from Washington State, Cody Ford from Oklahoma. There's a kid whose name is escaping me from a smaller school. I think it's like Alabama State. I think there's some left tackle depth here. I would take a left tackle. I'd let Trent Brown go, not because he's not good, but because I think he's going to get paid.
Even with this Isaiah Wynn coming back, yeah, obviously off an injury.
Yeah, because here's the thing with Wynn, and Wynn's going to play, but I would probably cut Marcus Cannon. So basically what I'm saying is I would have essentially rookie tackles. Bookend
with a 42-year-old quarterback, Chris. Yeah,
that's why you pay Dante Scarnecchia the big bucks. I'm telling you, the guy's an offensive line alchemist. He can do almost anything.
Yeah, but, I know, and I'm with you on that. I hate the thought of that. I know. Look, even if it's going to be deep, and there have been rookies that have come in and been dominant,
it'd be two first round picks, though.
But I for me, the sensible thing for them to do, considering Brady's age and it's his blind side, you tag Brown. See if, because I think that they drafted Wynn to be the left tackle.
They did.
He blows out the Achilles, so you essentially have Brown as insurance and see how Wynn comes along this year.
But you'd go lines.
I would, yeah.
See, I'd go defensive line. Murray, you said wide receiver, right?
Yeah.
No, tight end. Said tight end.
It depends.
That's
if Gronk retires, and you look at some of these mocks, Irv Smith from Alabama could be there. That's the guy.
Irv Smith, T.J. Hockenson, Noah Fant.
Caden Smith
from Stanford, that's a good name. So there's some tight end.
Interesting. Gasper says left tackle because Dante Scarnecchia is an offensive line alchemist.
He's
Marshall,
the best.
Marshall, quickly, what's an alchemist?
One who takes different things and puts them together.
It's a chemist.
Someone who can turn something into gold.
It's chemist. A chemist. Essentially, it's an old word for a chemist. Alchemy. Yeah. I see. I knew that.
You're good.
He will take Eye of Newt. And then mix it around with all kinds of other rats and flies, and poof, we have a great offensive line.
All right, Chris, you're on time today. We can let you go now.
Oh, sounds good.
Appreciate it. Thank you for joining us.
What are you doing tomorrow from 11 to 2?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Just
yeah.
a little award-winning radio program, that's all. Yeah.
That is Gasper and Murray?
Yes, 11 to 2 tomorrow, full show.
What award was that?
And is any part of that the Celtics show?
Yes, noon.
Okay, noon to one.
Yeah.
Noon to one. So that is a Celtics hour in the middle of the Gasper.
That's the creamy nougat center inside of Gasper and Murray.
There you go. Well, you can look forward to hearing
the best the weekend has to offer.
It's actually the If I Believe It, It's a Fact award.
Oh, yeah. They won out. I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the award that we won.
Perfect. Chris, you have to say it with more conviction.
Sorry.
The award-winning Gasper and Murray show.
You're right, Jimmy. Sorry.
Mars, get your headlines. Chris, thanks for joining us. Have a nice
Good
weekend. We will be back for the final agenda-free hour of Felger and Mads, driven by your calls when we come back.
This is Felger and Mads
on 98.5,
The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.